I definitely feel prideful about being from Canada and just being a kid from Canada, given the chance to play here at Alabama. I'm extremely grateful for it, and I definitely don't take it for granted.
Welcome to The Wagon, presented by Sport Clips, the official podcast of the Canadian Football League.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Waggle podcast, brought to you by us here at CFL.ca and brought to you by our friends at Sport Clips. That's right, every Waggle podcast is brought to you by Sport Clips, who are known for their Sport Clips MVP haircut experience. Shampoo is massaged into your scalp, hot steam towels are put gently on your face, and you can watch sports on TV like hockey, baseball, basketball, but we know the best sport is football. And certainly right now we are watching some college football. So shout out to Sport Clips for allowing us to do this. It's good to be a guy. It's good to be a Sport Clips guy. And it's good to be a fan, guy, girl, whoever, if you're watching college football right now and you're looking for Canadians, because Canadians have made a big impact at Power 5 conferences throughout the country, all the way in this abbreviated season, into bowl season, and also into the national championship game, where John Metchie III of the Alabama Crimson Tide is playing and representing Brampton in all of Canada. And so we figured it'd only be fitting, a guy who played college football at high level in this country and now is doing a great job both covering Canadians who are playing amateur football but covering the professional game in Canada, Marshall Ferguson, friend of the pod, to come on to talk about all of the prospects in the NCAA, how they project to the CFL, and what he makes of what's been an interesting CFL offseason from a free agency standpoint. That conversation coming next with Marshall Ferguson. All right, it's that time of year. We're not just talking football. We're talking college football. And in the NCAA, Canadians have made lots of noise down south. And someone who's doing a great job covering it, talking about it, writing about it, is Marshall Ferguson. He is the co-host of Marsh and Mello, 6 to 9 a.m. on TSN 1150. Many of our CFL fans know he's not only the Ticats play-by-play guy, but an analyst for us on CFL.ca, also part of the TSN Racing podcast. He might be like one of the few people in the industry who has like more roles and jobs than I do, but now he's got a really important role, one that takes a lot of time and gives you not a lot of sleep. He is the dad of Noah Jasper Ferguson. So congrats, Marsh, and welcome, and thank you for doing this, because you're still what I call like in the dark months, and Kyle Scott, our producer of this podcast, can attest this. He's also a relatively new dad. You're still in the phase that like is super fun because, you know, they're around the size of a football and you can, you know, cover all the points, make sure they're healthy. But also, like, it's a blur and everything changes so fast. And then you look back and you're like, what happened?
Yeah, 100%. First of all, nobody has more jobs than you in sports media. Let me just get that out of the way. Like, I stay busy, but you're busy. Like, it's a different level of what you do, DJ. But I look at, yeah, these first couple of months have been pretty cool just because everything does happen so quickly, but you basically just try to enjoy every single day, as I know that you understand. So it's, yeah, have little moments of appreciation along the way and try to enjoy it, knowing that it's going to be different the next day. And then the next day comes and it's that much more fun. So hopefully it continues to go that way, because I think the key for all of us is having a mom who can make you feel like she's doing all the heavy lifting and we're just there to be fun dad, which is a blessing for sure.
100%. And both of those things are of the utmost importance when you're doing it in the middle of a global pandemic. So shout out to you, who's doing it at an even harder period of time. And you mentioned, that challenge. I think of so many football sayings or phrases, right, in that period that you're in, like win the day. Like you're just trying to win the day at the point that you are, or just spot the ball, like embrace the grind. Like literally, those are the things that come to mind when I think of that phase. And there are only two teams in college football who are still saying those things: Ohio State, obviously, the Buckeyes, and Alabama, who make it a routine of getting this far nationally. And for nationally, us as Canadians, it's been nice to have some bowl games on as a bit of a distraction. I do feel kind of, you know, somewhat squeamish with the fact that, like, we're still playing football for free in the middle of a global pandemic, and there's like fans and stands and bowl games that don't matter, and they're not socially distancing. But the games have been fun to watch, especially because there's been many Canadians in those games. 42 different Canadians played in NCAA bowl games now that we've only got one left. Let's start with the one who still has a game left to play, the one that most of our listeners have heard of at this point. John Menchie, the third and talented receiver for Alabama. You know, you've seen him not just this month, but all year. What sticks out to you about his transition to the SEC, but also how seamless it's been given the age of the player?
Yeah, for me, I think the first thing that jumps out is, like you say, transitioning to the SEC and watching how his speed is almost unmatched. Like, that is absolutely a conference full of athletic freaks from the best football playing states and now provinces throughout North America. I mean, they even recruit internationally now, looking into Europe and Alabama to try and get the very best. And people got to realize, to crack the roster, like to get invited, to get a scholarship, to be a part of that program is incredible. To get an opportunity to be on a practice roster and be climbing closer and closer into the dress roster is even more incredible. To get an opportunity, albeit because of injury, which is really when he got his chance, but to get a chance to be able to be in uniform in an SEC game is big. To do it, to be productive, to be consistently productive, to be listed in the 2021 Heisman Trophy betting odds very early on, about a year away here, it's insane what he has done. And I think he's such an entertaining player that has adapted so well to the style of play down there. And at the same time, you got to realize, like, people that truly understand the history of Alabama football, you know, it's always been the Crimson Tide, huge offensive lines and running over people. And yeah, they still have that. They've got Najee Harris. They, of course, in the past have always had guys like Derrick Henry and Mark Ingram and all the rest going back further and further and further. But in terms of pass play winning percentage that Pro Football Focus tracks, that I always kind of keep my eye on, Alabama has literally just decided in the last basically 2 years with Steve Sarkisian, who was their offensive coordinator, who now leaves for the head coaching job at the University of Texas. They just decided, oh, this is how you guys want to play? You want to throw the ball? Cool, we'll beat you doing that too. And John Menchie has been a part of that revolution at Alabama. So not only is he somebody who Canadians can be proud of to say in the national championship game, okay, that guy has got Canadian roots, and Brampton and all the rest, as people that are in and around the Brampton Bulldogs organization know the Menchie name extremely well. And it, of course, exists in the CFL very prominently as well right now. But when I just look at the way that he's factored into the history of this moment, there are so many chapters of Alabama greatness, and he's at a really unique one because he's a part of really a revolution in the way that they're actually playing the game inside the SEC, where it's starting to catch up to other big conferences and starting to say, okay, if you want to throw the ball 40 times a game, we can do that. We have the athletes, and now they're just letting everybody go free with it.
Yeah, and what he's done as a sophomore, basically being one of the most dominant and scary receivers in the conference, a conference loaded with great defenses, and doing it across from Devonta Smith, who is really good, but he's also 22, like, as a senior, is crazy. Yeah. When you think of Alabama, I mean, obviously historically they've been loaded at a bunch of positions because they just create pros. But when you look at the lineage of wide receivers that he's following, and in many ways, you know, tracking better than at his young age, you're talking about Amari Cooper, Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, most recently Jerry Jeudy and Henry Ruggs, and now Devontae Smith will be another first rounder. When you look at what those guys did as sophomores, and really the ability to be moved around the field, to run the entire route tree, and what Menchie's doing, it's crazy to me, given, you know, how fast his ascension has been. What do you think the ceiling for him is? He's certainly a player we'll see on Sundays.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's somebody who, I think right now you're starting to see people's eyes be opened. I always think of this when I'm watching Hollywood Brown or even John Brown with the Buffalo Bills right now, which is if you're that really small, hyper-speed receiver, if Brandon Banks would have existed as that guy coming out of Kansas State into today's NFL, we probably would have never seen Speedy B playing Hamilton or the Canadian Football League, right? Because he would have been every single week when I watch Hollywood Brown play for the Ravens, I'm like, that's Brandon Banks. That just happens to be a different era that he's been accepted. And so they've gone with some of these really small hyperspeed receivers, I like to call them. And I think when you're looking at Mechie, he's not necessarily the tiny guy, but he's also not the big, big bodies like you're talking about, the Julio Jones and even Amari Cooper, the dominant over the middle. But he's this like hybrid between the two, which I think gives him great versatility that's actually going to help him moving forward into his draft year, where you're going to start looking at him and saying, okay, is he an over the middle guy? Yeah, he's not great at it, but he's certainly a pretty high-end talent, and it'll only get better with time as he learns how to read defenses and accelerate his routes at different points, coming out of breaks and all the rest. Is he a possession guy? Yeah, he's got great hands. He can run the safe routes for you. Is he a good blocker? Yeah. Is he physical? Yeah, because he's got a big enough frame to be able to get those things done, which sometimes the smaller receivers can't. So he's just got so many different ways to be productive and to help your football team that I have a really hard time imagining we'll ever see him in the Canadian Football League. But again, as all CFL personnel men always say, if there's a Canadian kid who is playing at the very highest level of football and playing on Sundays and accelerating his career in the SEC, what's to be mad about? I mean, that's a huge celebration for all Canadian football developers everywhere to have that type of exposure for a Canadian flag attached to that name in that spot.
I mentioned the amount of Canadians, playing in bowl games, and naturally whenever, Buffalo is still playing, there's going to be a bunch of Canadians because I feel like half their team at times is Canadians. Were there any guys that really jumped out at you that you saw and made an impression on you during this bowl period?
Yeah, I think the first thing that was kind of funny is on our radio show, we latched ourselves onto the Marshall Thundering Herd throughout the year just because we didn't have the Ticats and Hamilton, and sarcastically we're like, sure, what the hell, let's play off the name game and go ahead and attach ourselves to Marshall, to the point where we have been invited to go down and do a broadcast from their game next year. They sent us Marshall Thundering Herd gear and all the rest. Now they don't have any Canadians that are actually on the roster. They have some Canadian connections when it comes to the broadcast booth down there, but they played against the University of Buffalo in the Camellia Bowl. And as I'm watching that, obviously the connection in recruiting is super strong to everything that Buffalo has when it comes into reaching into Ontario and sometimes into Manitoba, Quebec. But I look at Dominic Johnson, a receiver for Buffalo, who's a senior, as being somebody that is an interesting prospect because he's got a big body, and I think that he's a fun name to be able to follow. The other one that jumps out to me, just because he was part of, I think, the fairy tale story of the entire year, was Enoch McConzo, who's the linebacker for Coastal Carolina, because I read the great profile that Herb Zerkowski, I believe, did on him in the start of the college football season when Coastal Carolina started to be a thing. And again, a kid, this just goes to show all the number of Canadians that have gone to all over the place. And there's a lot of them that are playing in JUCO and D2, D3, whatever it might be, that are trying to get their shot. But to have a kid from Quebec that ends up going down and becoming a part of this weird fairy tale wrestling in the locker room, Conway, South Carolina, chicken on the side of the helmet. It's a weird, weird story, right? So it kind of fits with everything that we've dealt with this past year, where you're just like, okay, that's weird and wacky, and it doesn't feel like we would see that in a normal year, but it was something worth celebrating. And he was a really good player as well. Made a lot of good plays as well against BYU when I was watching that game, which I think was the college football game of the year, when BYU set on short notice, sure, what the hell, let's go ahead and play these guys. And of course, BYU ends up losing on the goal line on the final play of the game because Coastal Carolina just kind of gutted that one out at home. But I think that those are the couple of the names that jump off the page. The obvious ones obviously are Chuba Hubbard, who opted out at the back end of the season, and his teammate there, Eamon Ogbonmamiga, who is just an absolute tackling machine that's crazy to be able to watch. But there's a lot of hidden depth, I think. And the thing I'm excited for, as much as it's a complete headache to me as somebody trying to kind of scout the draft in the CFL this upcoming year and externally kind of figure out where all the puzzle pieces are going to land in a year where we didn't have U Sports football and didn't necessarily have a chance to be able to catch every person at every school that was playing from Canada down in the NCAA, is that you're going to end up seeing a lot of these names that were from kind of like the back end of D1 that don't get the big time exposure, like the Ungbong Bamigas or the Hubbards or the Mechies or the Josh Palmers, any of those guys, and you're going to end up kind of having them, I think, maybe be a surprise draft pick once we get into the CFL draft this year, and then people are going to have to figure out once we get to training camp or preseason, okay, what's this guy really all about? Because the scouting on all of this is so difficult because there is so many Canadians that are involved in this level of football now. And in a year where they were the only thing that was really happening, again, a little bit cringy at times to see that it was the only thing that was happening. But if it's the only thing that's happening, it's the only film you have, that's an advantage to those guys who were able to get on the field in 2020.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And you know, when you mentioned the Oklahoma State guys, first thing I think about is not that they're both Canadian. They're both from Alberta. And, yeah, you know, we've historically had Canadians go and do well in the NCAA, but they, for the most part, have been from two provinces, obviously Ontario, Southern Ontario, and British Columbia. And now we're getting, you know, guys from the prairies. We're getting more and more guys every year coming out of CEGIP in Quebec and making a big impact. Syracuse alone, who, again, you know, you think of Canadians having a great experience there for basketball. Their football team has five kids from Quebec on it. What have you noticed about the diversity of Canadians that you're seeing make an impact in the NCAA?
Yeah, it's exciting. And the thing that I always enjoy in the last 3-4 years, I've noticed it more and more. And I'm sure that, you know, somebody who's been looking at the CFL draft dating back into the early 2000s or maybe even further would notice this as well. But like the idea of having a player from somewhere in Manitoba who gets noticed, gets picked up and gets developed and gets an opportunity, it's kind of unheard of. But now you're getting to the point where it's like, well, why can't a kid who is exceptionally talented, who grows up in Regina, get an opportunity to go down and play at Kansas State? Like, why can't somebody who is from, you know, Vancouver or from Burnaby, something like that, instead of only going to Washington or Oregon or, you know, down the coast further into California, somewhere like a Fresno State, why can't they be nationally recruited? If they're good enough, like, why can't they get an opportunity? And I think we've seen that from a couple of different names in the past couple of years. I always love that going through the draft and just realizing how much you've got this kind of spreading knowledge that Canadian football players are for real, and that they can be found not just at offensive and defensive line positions anymore, that you've got skill position guys that are making an impact at a higher and higher rate year over year. And I even think back to, you know, Nathan Rourke going from Ohio and being able to get drafted to the BC Lions this past kind of recruiting and draft cycle. So I'm excited to see where that continues to trend, because I know Christian Voyou is going from Ottawa native, who's going to make his way down to Penn State. Mm-hmm. And we saw what that happened like with Michael O'Connor, obviously being a Penn State, transferring back to UBC. And there becomes this relationship all of a sudden where it's like, you know, UBC gets a top end quarterback, but he can get humbled in U Sports. Well, maybe that starts to kind of drag the U Sports level up a little bit, where we're looking at it and saying, whether you're playing at a school like a Penn State, a Minnesota, or going down south and playing in the SEC like Tavius Robinson, who was playing for Guelph and jumps down and starts playing DN for Ole Miss, it's like, if you can have those guys and they're bouncing back and forth, you're starting to realize the level of play is just, it's great. And it doesn't really matter where you're playing. It's more about raising the tide of all of the players in Canadian football development. And I think that's exciting year over year when I watch the draft and see where guys are from and where their journey took them, because every single journey is different for these guys. And by the time that they get to the Canadian Football League, everybody's got different experiences and different knowledge that they can bring to the table. And again, that's only going to make the CFL game better.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's a really smart one with Tavius Robinson, Guelph native, and as you mentioned, you know, a guy who's wreaking havoc on the edge and on special teams for the Griffins. And I was acutely aware all year of what Tavius Robinson was doing for Ole Miss.
Yeah.
Because Guelph wouldn't let me forget. Like, every time he was making a play or every time he did something on social media, I was getting it from some Guelph source. And what I loved about that was there's no ill will to the fact that, like, he went through their program and had a better opportunity. Like, you know, the message is, if you're good enough, people will find you. And he's in a much better spot to compete at that level now than he would have been coming out of high school because of his experience in a program like Guelph in U Sports. And the same is true with NCAA players coming back to Canada and having a great experience in honoring the level of play in Canada. So I just love the fact that everyone in Guelph was just as excited for him to be able to play. And quite frankly, if he stayed in Canada, he wouldn't have been playing any football, and that wouldn't have been to his development. It would have been to his detriment. So I just love the fact that, you know, some of those silos are being broken down, and people are realizing that you can go back and forth across the border. We just want Canadians to be playing at a high level wherever it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing that I'll never forget about Tavius Robinson is it was a Yates Cup that I was working with you, Donovan, where I think that you were doing the color commentary back in 2018, if I'm not mistaken, and I was down doing sidelines and the pregame show and all the rest, and I showed up right behind the Guelph bus. I didn't know that it was them at the time, but I'm driving down into TD Waterhouse Stadium, and you go down the hill and you take the right into the parking lot and you go in behind the bus and they park, and I kind of get out and I grab my stuff, my bag, my computer, my game prep, and I start to walk towards the stadium, and I'm walking in amongst all the Guelph players. And it was funny because it kind of took me back to when I was playing at McMaster, as I'm sure you've had that experience after being a Mustang, where you're walking amongst players and you're like, man, this brings back some weird memories of like walking in with 60, 70, 80 guys into a building with all your team gear on. But, and I'm walking in behind a bunch of the Griffins, and I have my head down, I'm on my phone, because I wanted to stay out of the way and make my way through the tunnel. And as I did, I looked up, and I was looking directly into the lower back of someone, like at my height. And I played quarterback, and I'm 6'2", and I remember I looked up from my phone, I was looking into the mid-back of somebody, and I saw all of a sudden these huge afro coming out the top of the hat with the headphones on, and I literally started texting people. I'm like, who in the hell is that? I'm like, because I hadn't watched that much Guelph football throughout the year in 2018. And I was just like, that guy doesn't belong here, does he? I'm like, what is it? Tell me the background on this. I started asking around because I wasn't educated enough to understand his journey, where he was from. And sure enough, you know, you're watching him in his first year, essentially, at Guelph in that Yates Cup. And he's not making a ton of plays, but that's because he was so damn raw. Like, it was amazing to see the potential in him in person in a Yates Cup. And I'll never forget that, walking in and turning up and looking up and seeing that frame and immediately going, yeah, somebody should probably figure out where this is going, because I'm not sure that this is necessarily the perfect place for him to get the best exposure that he deserves, because he certainly looked like the type of player that you could craft into something special, as they're trying to do at Ole Miss now.
For sure. You know, I look at the Fall Scouting Bureau that came out as we try to, you know, project these prospects, and that's another big reason why you should keep tabs on the kids when they go down south. And you mentioned that outlier that this year is with the lack of play in U Sports and the lack of that visibility, and you see it in the Bureau rankings. 14 of the top 20 are from NCAA schools, and all of the top 10, and this is in the last Fall Scouting Bureau rankings, are from NCAA schools. And when I say schools, you know, often historically you get, you know, some Patriot League schools in here, some Ivy League schools in here. When I'm talking about schools that are, you know, producing prospects along the likes of Calgary and UBC and McMaster and Western, I'm talking about Cincinnati, Michigan, Ole Miss, West Virginia, North Carolina, North Carolina State, Tennessee, Virginia, and obviously Oklahoma State, and Iowa for Alaric Jackson, the O-lineman who's on the top of the list. Those are schools that readily expect to be in the top 25 year in, year out. So you're seeing the level of prospect going to the level of play in the NCAA certainly increase. Talk to me about Alaric Jackson, the offensive lineman from Iowa, the Windsor, Ontario native. What should people be looking for in his game?
He's just like your typical, looking at it almost like a Justin Senior type thing, where literally, like I was just talking about with Tavius Robinson, you look at him and you see him in pads and you're like, yep, that's a pro football player. Like that's a big body offensive lineman that can move in space and figure it out. I also think of, I'm trying to remember the offense of David Neville that ended up going to the BC Lions. It was out of Nebraska. Like he kind of reminds me of that in terms of that tall and looks lean, but he's still like 320, 330 pounds. But they're just like these athletic 300 plus pound offensive linemen that play in the Big Ten that they ask you to get out in space and to be able to lead block on toss sweeps and move on traps and be able to pull through and be physical with interior linebackers, which we all know when it comes to playing football in the cold, in the north, in the Big Ten a lot of the time, you end up getting those dominant downhill inside linebackers that these guys have to deal with. So I like his game. I mean, what's not to like at this point? He was named the Outland Trophy preseason watch list, I know, a couple of times, and that's something to be proud of. And then the idea of being able to go into a big bowl game at the back end of the year and having his team still be relevant, even though, again, it's funny when you list off all the names of the schools that are in there, the Michigans and the West Virginias and NC State and North Carolina and all those. It's like 2020 was such a strange year that it's hard to evaluate the strength of the program, because Penn State was awful this year. But Penn State, by and large, like you say, that's a top 25 perennially team that you want to be able to see Canadians go there, because you know that's going to give them an opportunity to make a name for themselves, right? So when I see those names of those schools, and Iowa included here for Alaric Jackson, is my first thought is it's an incredible accomplishment to be there. My kind of doubt in that is you go, well, yeah, but what about this year? But then you have to have the context of, okay, but how many games did they play? Like, how many times were they allowed to practice? Did they have a normal training camp and all the rest? And I think this is what, for guys like Alaric and Eamon Aubameyang and like everybody at the top of the scouting bureau that even had a chance to play, which obviously is an advantage. Just because you had a chance to play doesn't mean that it was a normal year. I think people need to realize that going into the CFL draft this year, and realizing that the draft process is different, the combine process might be different, and you're looking at what is the best way to get yourself ready to play football. And that obviously is to actually be on the field in pads, running around, hitting, catching, passing, all the things that you take as fundamental skills. But even in that, you're looking at game film and you're having to evaluate people. Like, we saw Trevor Lawrence, who's one of the most dominant quarterbacks in recent history of the NCAA, who didn't really look like himself. Well, why? Because he himself had COVID. He was surrounded by COVID issues at Clemson. They had to take a couple of weeks off here and there. He missed a couple of games. Like, it's been such an imbalanced season that for all of these big name schools that these guys have earned the right to be able to be prominent members of those teams, it's still such a strange situation leading into their draft process. So some guys are going to handle it better than others. You know, I think about the way that COVID has affected some people, even if, you know, whether you've actually tested positive or not. Lamar Jackson right now in the NFL is running around like crazy and playing at an unbelievable level entering the playoffs. And Myles Garrett, a former number one overall pick, has his hands on his knees the whole time and doesn't even look like himself pass rushing for the Browns. So all of this is to say there's a lot of context that you have to apply, I think, to all of these conversations leading into draft season, because nothing is normal. Even though we all figured you wave the checkered flag at 2020 and you turn the page and we move on and everything's back to normal, I think people are going to realize pretty quickly here in 2021, that's not necessarily the case, and everything has to be kind of applied with a little bit of a spoonful of knowledge, I think, in context to go with how you're trying to analyze these things, like Alaric Jackson and everybody else at the top of the list.
Yeah, nothing is normal is probably the understatement of the podcast for sure. It isn't normal. And I think when you say that, I think of free agency in the CFL this year, in this gap year, if you will. And it not being normal. Normally, there's this big hype, frenzy around it. You know how teams finished. You know what their needs are and how do they go address those needs, improve at positions. And it's like, well, everyone was 0-0. So what do teams need? What do they not need? With the amount of guys who were on deals that were short deals and they come up, how does that get addressed? So we've had some movement. The Bombers certainly were busy. They had an extension, a one-year extension with Stanley Bryant, which is obviously a big part of their offensive line. They also extended Jake Thomas for a year. Hamilton, your Tiger Cats were busy signing some receivers, which is one of the strengths of their team. And Edmonton, I think, was super interesting, going outside their building and making a little bit of a splash, getting Jonathan Rose and Mike Jones to come west. Because a lot of the news in I was bombarded on social media was, oh, so-and-so re-signs with their team. There wasn't a lot of movement from team to team. And Edmonton, I think, it was probably the biggest outlier in that. What have you made of the start of free agency and what might come in the future?
Yeah, I listened to the podcast episode that you did here on the Waggle with Chris O'Leary breaking it all down. And Chris was so good on that, because he was basically saying, like, there's no way to anticipate how this is going to unfold because we haven't done this before. But again, in Chris's trademark way, he painted it with an educated brush and looked at it and said, well, but here's the options. And I think some of the different options that were given in that and that I've been thinking about every day when I see these signings back is the guys that you sign back early on are typically the ones that you prioritize. And that's the ones that I've always enjoyed looking at. So I always look at the first five signings of a team. And sometimes that is your core national guys, your Canadians. So for BC, that was Wayne Moore, Andrew Pearson, Mario Villamizar, Adrian Clark. Like that was, hey, we've got four Canadians. We're going to announce them all together. We want them back. Hamilton did the same thing when they went with Sean Thomas Erlington and Mike Daly and Jackson Bennett. And like you start to get these groups of, and you can tell that inside the building, based on the way that they are packaged and when they are re-signed, that the organization has circled certain names and said, must have, must have, must have, must have. Okay, got them. Good. Let's move on to the next thing. And then all of a sudden you hear, you know, in Saskatchewan, you've got, you know, receiver Shaq Evans coming back, or you've got Brandon Banks or bigger names or splashier names. But I enjoy seeing the way that guys are prioritized, specifically the Canadians early on, because that tells you the direction that the franchise wants to go with their core. And it also helps educate how they want to draft, because that can tell you that they really like having quality Canadians at a certain position that they're going to try to backfill some depth with, or that can tell you that maybe they like somebody so much that they've signed them and they're not going to focus on that draft slot because they feel like they are secured at that position with their future, at least for the next year or two, because we know the cycles on these things are always so short in CFL free agency. But I love watching it unfold. It's funny that you mentioned Edmonton, because the one that jumped out for me was Mike Jones, who I had fun on radio for a couple of years doing play-by-play. Every time he'd make a catch, I'd say, who? And then I'd have Mike Morielli, my color man, say, Mike Jones! And we loved having that bit on our radio call that was kind of like an inside joke for anybody who consistently listened to us. The rest of people that don't know the song or anything probably just thought that we didn't know who that actually was that was catching the football, which is not great for radio. But anyways, I always enjoy being able to have that. And I saw that he signed with Edmonton. And I was like, wait a minute, free agency doesn't open until February. And this is kind of the game of catch-up that I think the average fan all the way up to the media member and people like me who love the CFL and covering it so much is you end up having to kind of backtrack and go, well, why was Mike Jones available? And you're like, well, nobody signed him in 2020 free agency, right? And so now we're leading into 21 free agency and he was a free agent. Like he was just out there for anybody to be able to pick up. But immediately I'm like, how did they get him? I feel like I just saw him catching a ball or dropping a ball on the goal line in the Grey Cup against the Blue Bombers down there in Calgary. And I was on the field and I remember that moment in the fourth quarter. And it's like, yeah, that was the last pass attempt to Mike Jones ever in a Ticats uniform after they drafted him out of Southern way back in whatever it was, 2012, 13, 14, somewhere in there. So seeing some teams be super aggressive on their nationals, seeing other teams deciding to target on the outside, seeing, you know, somebody like Brock Sunderland bringing in Jonathan Rose, somebody who had a connection with, obviously, from his time a little bit in Ottawa. I think all of that is super, super interesting. And I hope that when fans are looking at how this unfolds, you know, when you see somebody like a Jake Thomas getting signed back as the longest tenured Bomber, like that should tell you what Kyle Walters and that organization cares about. Like they're trying to create that culture that they want to have from the top down of here's what it means to be a Bomber. And we're going to keep those guys in house that we've cared about for a long time. And I feel like you can read into these signings all the time. And that's kind of the fun here in the dead of the winter when we don't have much else to talk about because there's not a whole lot else of player movement other than some guys from the United States getting picked up to come in and hopefully strap up the pads when it comes to a training camp.
Yeah, and a lot of that talk year in, year out is where are the quarterbacks going? What's that musical chairs going to look like? But again, with no real games and no quarterbacks coming out of nowhere or really faltering, there isn't much on that end. Given the fiscal realities of the pandemic, we've had some quarterbacks rework their deals, and maybe that changes the economics at the position moving forward, which is why I find one name, and you can go to CFL.ca /FA21 to look at the full list of pending free agents, not just for your team, but across the league. There's one name on that list that really, really intrigues me, a guy you know very well, Jeremiah Masoli, who, when last seen, was playing at, I will say, an MOP level. Certainly the best football that he had played in his career and had his team rolling. But when the next Grey Cup happens, he will be 33 years old. And so I'm really interested to see, because the musical chairs at the quarterback position hasn't really changed, what his value is like, given he's a year removed from that ACL injury and thus is less of a risk when it was, you know, a question of how healthy he would be to start training camp and to start the season. But he's also, again, a year older in a position that has aged gracefully in the CFL, but still he's a player who I think his athleticism is part of the reason why he's successful. What do you make of his prospects and his potential market?
The thing that I've always loved about covering Jeremiah Masoli in Hamilton is that everybody has an opinion on him. You could be walking through the concourse and you'll hear people saying that he's the greatest quarterback ever, he's the most athletic guy, and he can throw on the run and move the pocket. And then you'll hear people that'll say, he's inaccurate, I don't understand why we haven't moved on, they should have just, you know, decided to make a decision differently. So, but to understand, I think, Jeremiah Masoli's career and to respect what he's been through, I think you have to look at the full journey of what he's done, whether it be Oregon through Ole Miss, making his way into the Canadian Football League, Edmonton over to Hamilton, backup, relegated, package player, maybe a little snap here or there, but was never looked at as a consistent guy. Obviously, the Claros injury ended up forcing his hand into Tommy Condell, crafting a bit of an offense around him going into a playoff game in an East final that was played in Ottawa, and he gave Ottawa everything that they could get in that year and tried to charge the hill, if you will, on that one. But I just look at it as being that his journey has taken him through so much adversity, and he's learned so much and he's grown so much as both a player and as a man in the time that I've been covering him. I mean, just 5 years, like, there's been a lot of personal growth from Soli that I look at it now as he's in free agency and where is he at in his life as much as he's at in his football career. And I think where he's at in his life is he wants to maximize his value, but we all know that there's a very limited game of musical chairs that gets played during quarterback free agency season. And very rarely do we see Bo Levi take the leap of faith from Calgary to Toronto, which opens up Mike Riley to get offered a big contract to go to Calgary instead of going to BC. I mean, it's usually there's one or two significant moves per year, and the rest of them are kind of ancillary, and they all end up counting at the end of the year because a lot of quarterbacks end up playing through injuries or playing time decisions otherwise. But when I look at Masoli, I just think it would have to be really, really attractive for him to leave Hamilton. But I know his personality, and it's absolutely one to take a look. And he's right to take a look. Like, he should see what is out there for him, because Dane Evans, I think the organization really likes, as shown by the contract length that they gave him, how much they respect him, how much they want to develop him. And I think that moving forward, you're going to see more and more Dane Evans. But at the same time, when Masoli is on, and his game is as unique and controversial as anybody in the CFL, but when it's on, it's as productive as anybody in the CFL, especially once he got paired up with Brandon Banks, who has already re-signed in Hamilton. So I want to get to training camp where Dane Evans is healthy, Jeremiah Masoli is healthy. I want them to stay healthy, and I want them to have a training camp battle to see who gets the opportunity to start. And whoever doesn't start, I think will still play some. And the reason that I think that'll work is there's not a lot of ego between those two guys. Like, it's a really unique situation where it's not, well, he's taking my snaps, or why is he getting the call on the 5-yard line when I have to take the snap from my own 5-yard line? They're just interested in winning. And a big part of that is that Orlando Steinauer has created this great environment where he's kind of like, I don't give a damn about all of your personal preferences. It's about winning. But he still is able to combine that with a human nature of saying, I want you to all have personal success, but your personal success, you have to realize, is designed for us to have team success, which is why getting to the Grey Cup in 2019 and being undefeated at home in 2019 was so great for the Tiger Cats, because that was the modus operandi. And then they end up getting there, and Winnipeg obviously just caves their head in the Grey Cup in a way that not a lot of people could have predicted. But for Masoli, I mean, he wants to be in a position to win, and he wants to be in a position where he feels he is appreciated, because he's been turned over a lot of times in his career by a lot of different people. And I think he'll take a look, but I think Hamilton at the end of the day is still the place where he feels most appreciated and feels like he can do the most winning right now.
Yeah. If I am a decision maker in the league, I'm certainly having dialogue with his agent and bringing in some competition. If I don't have a bona fide stud already at the position. Right. Yeah. But if you're Ottawa, if you're Toronto, even if you're Winnipeg, and certainly, obviously, Hamilton likes the player, but I for sure would want to bring him in and at the very least take a look and maybe see if he can not at the very least win the job, but certainly be a high A backup if he doesn't win the job. Because I think what we've learned in recent years is it takes two quarterbacks to get through a season. And certainly in a season where you may not know who's up and down from week to week because of COVID-19 and close contacts, it's going to be even more important that you don't pull a Denver Broncos, that you have someone who can give you an opportunity to compete at the position. And so for those reasons, I think Masoli, from my perspective, should have a bidding war. But you're right, the opinions on him seem to never be somewhat neutral. They seem to be somewhat divisive. And actually, that takes me to my last quarterback that I wanted to pick your brain on, someone who was in the CFL, was a divisive character there. And in a short stint in the NFL, it seems to be the same. That'd be Chris Streveler, who got the start in a win and get in the playoff game for the Arizona Cardinals because Kyler Murray was banged up. And now Murray ended up playing in relief, and Streveler was 11 for 16 for 105 with a TD and a pick, and had four carries for 12 yards. But the comments went from, you know, praise that the CFL transplant not only stuck with the Cardinals for the entire year, but was, you know, the guy to get the call when Kyler went down, to the fact that we may not even see him coming back to the CFL. He might have to play in the fan-controlled football league with Johnny Manziel because he struggled so much. The commentary of the actual game, I'm sure, fueled some of that reaction. What was your reaction to seeing Streveler play in a limited snaps against the Rams on Sunday?
I'm so glad that you asked about this. I honestly, like, we could talk for an hour about just Chris Streveler's Sunday afternoon in the NFL in week 17. Like, it is honestly, DJ, it's I don't even know where to begin. I guess I'll just start by saying the caveat on this is I loved Chris Streveler when he was in the Canadian Football League, but I didn't love him because he was an elite passer. I loved him because he was an enigma. Like, he was so special to watch because he was so different. And the way that Paul Lapolis, in that marriage with Streveler and his ability athletically, were paired was magical to watch. And I was studying during the 2019 CFL season when you end up having Matt Nichols go down and then you end up having Streveler come in and he gets to be the starter for a while before they end up making the move to go and get Kolaros, which obviously puts them over the top. And then you see Streveler and how brave he was battling on that injured ankle foot throughout the back end of the season. And it's like, the guy was just an absolute battle horse. He was brave. He was tough. But with all that being said, he led the CFL in checkdowns, which is basically the zone under 10 yards in between the hashes. 18.7% of his pass attempts were checkdowns. Like, he's not an evolved passer. And I don't want to pretend like I know what he is now, because he's had a full year in and around Cliff Kingsbury and watching Kyler Murray and learning from NFL coaching and all the rest to become a different quarterback. And maybe his game has evolved in a way that I haven't seen and was not put on display in that game on Sunday. But when I watched the way that he played, it was exactly the same way that he played in the Canadian Football League. And like, that's not a shot at him saying, oh, he hasn't gotten better, he hasn't evolved. Players are what they are. Like, I remember Mike Leach talking about the accuracy of quarterbacks, and the mistake on coaching accuracy is that high school coaches always think, well, you know, I'll coach this kid up because in Pop Warner, he never had a good enough coach to teach him how to be more accurate with the football throwing. And then you end up having college coaches who say, well, this high school coach didn't know what he was doing. I'll get him. I'll make him better. And then when his accuracy is bad in college, NFL coaches say, well, I'll get my hands on him. I'll teach him how to throw the football more accurate. It's like there's this fallacy that you can just coach in accuracy. To somebody who has the athletic ability that Chris Streveler does, you don't have to coach in the accuracy, because he is what he is. And what he is an extremely unique player at that position, which, by the way, there's a role that's evolving in the National Football League. Everybody loves to reference Taysom Hill. It's more than that. Like, there's all sorts of big bodies from around the football world that all of a sudden it's, you used to have, you know, the quarterback who was the big body pocket passer guy. Then you used to have, you know, the slight runner that would come in once in a while in certain packages. Now you're starting to see that there's this role evolving for the big body quarterback who might not have the most accurate of arm, but has a big strong arm But can also run around on special teams. He could be a fullback for you. He could be a blocking receiver. He can catch a ball once in a while if you need to, and he can come in and run your offense if need be as well. So that role for Chris Streveler, I think, is perfect in the NFL. I don't think he's coming back to the CFL anytime soon because he doesn't need to be a starter in the CFL to validate his worth. He can make a ton of money. If he wants to sign a one-year deal for $1 million with every team in the NFL for the next 31 straight years, that's a pretty good way to make a living. Like, and he's got the ability to be able to fill a void and to create something unique in every single NFL offense. The one thing that I come back to with Boomer Esiason's comment, which I know for whatever reason set everybody on fire, was that when I talked earlier about Jeremiah Masoli and having Tommy Condell build an offense around him, what happened in Hamilton was that at first when the injury happened to Kolaros and in comes Jeremiah Masoli, it was Masoli running Zach Kolaros' offense. And so he didn't look like himself. Now, in that playoff game in Ottawa, Tommy Condell threw in a package of plays that actually accentuated the strengths of Jeremiah Masoli, and he looked like a significantly more comfortable player. It looked like his Oregon Ducks offense. And then you see June Jones come in and literally build the entire thing in 2018 around Jeremiah Masoli and his strengths and Brandon Banks and his strengths. And what happens? They become one of the most explosive offenses in the CFL. Well, when I'm watching Chris Streveler play on Sunday, that's not Chris Streveler's offense. That's Kyler Murray's offense. So the idea of, hey, just stand back there and sling it down the middle of the field and, oh, yeah, it got picked because you threw into traffic. What else did you think he was going to do? Look at his CFL career. He wasn't an accurate passer. He didn't make good decisions, and he didn't have a high completion percentage over 20 yards down the field. I think he only completed something like 6 or 8 passes on 20 yards or more. I'd have to go back and check the charts that I have, but throughout the entire time that he was starting in the CFL in 2019, it's not his strength. And so when Boomer Esiason comes out and says, this isn't the CFL, this isn't the Grey Cup, he was literally saying, you can't get away with that. And he wasn't painting it as the CFL is trash or CFL quarterbacking is trash or anything else. He was literally going off a video clip they played earlier in the broadcast, which I guarantee is the only time that he's ever heard of Chris Streveler before, because Boomer Esiason is working in the studio the whole year, called in to substitute for Tony Romo as a backup analyst in that game. He called him Revler at one point in the game. Like, Boomer has no idea who that dude is. I guarantee on Boomer's play sheet, Donovan, you know this as somebody who's called games before. I guarantee it said, Chris Streveler, here's his number, South Dakota State, CFL. Like, it wouldn't have had anything else. It would have been, we're never going to see this guy, whatever, throw it in the back end, and if he gets in, we'll just make it up on the fly. Full credit to everybody on CFL Twitter who got super offended by that, but you don't have to be, because Boomer didn't know what he was talking about. It was a throwaway comment, and what he said was factually not wrong. You can't throw it down the middle of the field, but you can't do it in the CFL, the Grey Cup, U Sports Football, the NCAA, anywhere. He was basically commenting on a basic quarterback notion and just a throwaway comment on a bad throw down the middle of the field that people took as he's destroying our beautiful game, which I just don't think was true. So anyways, like I said, I could talk for another hour about all of this. It got me fired up because there's so many layers to it. But as somebody who had an unhealthy obsession with Chris Streveler during his time up here in the CFL, watching him play, I was like, I feel like I'm uniquely qualified to actually give analysis on this other than, you know, big man throw far. Because that was a lot of what the analysis was, I think, on Twitter was, this guy doesn't know how to do anything other than this. I'm like, yeah, it's not because he doesn't want to. It's that he's never been an extremely effective passer deep down the field. So why would we expect him to suddenly evolve into something we've never seen before?
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating, you know, that Chris Streveler was Chris Streveler. Like, he kind of is who we thought he was. And if anything, when players go to the NFL, it affirms what we already believed about them in the CFL. I haven't learned anything different about Alex Singleton this year than I already knew about him. I mean, he's going to go sideline to sideline, and he's going to be assignment correct, and he's going to play with energy and passion. Chris Streveler is tough as they come. He's, you know, a hybrid between Tim Tebow and Taysom Hill. He's athletically dominant, and, you know, if you give him some big windows to throw in and a stacked box because he adds into the run game and is a run threat, then he can be really, really productive and gash you for big plays. And if you don't, he's going to struggle to make completion after completion and drive the field against you. And that's what we saw on ultimately on Sunday. But the other thing that was lost was, look, Jalen Ramsey and Aaron Donald make a lot of quarterbacks look relatively ordinary. So, it could have been Kyler Murray, and later in the game, it was Kyler Murray, and the offense didn't look appreciably different. So, I thought it was an affirmation that, like, well, if he didn't exactly set the house on fire in the NFL, in many ways, he was more productive in a larger sample in that game than he was in the CFL, when he was just used in spots that would be favorable. I found the frenzy of it somewhat interesting, but it's great that you gave the conversation some context and some nuance, which you don't get on social media.
And I was going to say too, just to end off on that thought, like if you got angry at the comment that Boomer made, it's because you went into the conversation wanting to get angry about the comment that Boomer made. And I think a lot of the times the major sport networks, whether it be north or south of the border, they thrive on the clicks of the idea of people wanting to get angry. So they feed you that thing because they go, I know you're going to get angry about this. And it was presented as such, I think, for a couple of days online for the CFL fans out there. And it was like, you don't have to take the bait, guys. It's okay. Like, it can be a dumb comment. It can be a throwaway. And the physical geography of what Boomer Esiason was talking about, where he's saying you can't throw down the middle of the field blind like that, literally with the lack of width in a CFL or in an NFL field compared to the CFL, the windows are tighter. Like when you mentioned Jalen Ramsey there, spaces close faster. There are typically lankier DBs in the National Football League. There are guys with the better athletic testing and all the rest. So the idea of it closing quicker and having to make faster decisions, it's absolutely true. Again, Chris Streveler was not brought into the NFL to be throwing 18-yard dig routes versus cover two with a five-man rush. He was brought in to be a backup quarterback who was absolutely a package player. He earned that right. He's earned the money he's going to get there. And anywhere else he goes in the NFL, I love the guy. I love watching him play. He's unique. He's fun. But the idea that he should have been something different than he was is just kind of uneducated.
Well, we lean on you for that education. And once again, we're better for it. So thank you for this, Marsh. And make sure you get some sleep when you can with the little one.
Absolutely. Thank you, Donovan. I appreciate it, man.
And thanks again to Marshall at TSN Marsh is the follow on Twitter. He'll talk you off a ledge if you're freaking out about how former CFL players are being portrayed in the NFL. And speaking of NFL, obviously we've got Wild Card Weekend, but the big college game that we talked about, the Ohio State facing Alabama, number 4 against number 1. Goes January 11th at 8 p.m. Eastern. Keep a lookout for John Mechie III. He will, for sure, be part of the story if Alabama once again gets back to their title level. We're hopefully staying at a championship level, even though we, like you, are really, really missing some football. But we hope to have this conversation to help you get through that period as we're now into 2021. Congratulations for making it. And a new football season is on the horizon. In the interim, if there's anyone you want us to talk to, anything you want us to talk about, let us know. At CFL is the handle on Instagram, on Twitter. At Donovan Bennett is mine on both platforms as well. Please engage with us. We love hearing feedback from you. You can also give us some feedback without even tweeting. You can like, you can favorite, you can share, you can subscribe, you can rate wherever you're listening to this podcast. We love that interaction, so keep it up. Until next time, thanks for listening.
The WAG, presented by Sportclips, the official podcast of the Canadian Football League.